Welcome to the Sports Law Biz Podcast, dedicated to helping people better understand the law and business of sports. I'm your host, Peter Ott, and we've got a lot to talk about here today, so why don't we just jump in? Hello, everybody. This is Peter Ott with the Sports Law Biz Podcast. I'm here today with Bobby Sue Doyle Hazard. Bobby Sue currently works as an assistant general counsel for a professional sports franchise, and she is a graduate of the Dickinson School of Law at Penn State and the Eisenberg School of Management at UMass Amherst. It's good to have you here with us today, Bobby Sue.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
So yeah, today we're going to talk about a couple things. We're going to talk about your career and how you've gotten to where you are, as well as your new project, a podcast called Leveling the Playing Field. I think we're two episodes in now, and it's an entrant into the growing field of sports law and sports business podcasts. So excited to talk about that. But first, why don't we start off talking about yourself? One thing that listeners of this podcast are often asking about is you know, how do you work in sports and things like that? And so if you could just kind of tell your story and how you got to where you are now, and if it was a straight line or anything like that, that'd be great to start off.
Sure. So my story is anything but a straight line. I decided early on, and by early on, I mean maybe junior year of high school, that I was going to apply to UMass for sport management. I am not entirely sure why, other than I think I heard somebody's older brother talking about it and it sounded cool. And then while there, I fell in love with sports law. I took, at the time, Glenn Wong was teaching there. And I took his introduction to sports law class and then every other related class, which is how I somehow ended up going to law school. And at the time that I went to law school, there weren't really many programs that focused on sports law. I know that there are a few now that do, but I just took your basic, you know, contracts and business law and stuff like that. And when I graduated, moved back up to Massachusetts. Unfortunately, it was at the same time as the legal market completely dropping. And so, yeah, in a place like Boston, which has so many really good schools, especially law schools, you had this trickle down effect that was not good for a lot of law graduates. People were being laid off at all of the large law firms. So you had these really overqualified lawyers now working at mid-tier and so on and so forth. So for the first 2 years that I was licensed, I was waitressing, and I would take a little matter here or there that, I don't know, a friend had an aunt who passed away, so I helped probate the estate, or a family member, I don't know, got in trouble with some debt collection stuff, so I helped with that. And at the same time, Twitter had been invented and rolled out to the world, and there were a lot of solo attorneys that were finding a community on Twitter. So while I was tweeting about my job search and waitressing and, I don't know, whatever terrible dress someone was wearing at an awards ceremony, I gained a couple of followers who really impacted my life. One of them was this woman, Lisa Vanderpool, who now works for a PR agency, but used to be a reporter for the Boston Business Journal. And following me gave her an idea to write an article about young attorneys who couldn't find work as attorneys and what they were doing instead. And that article ended up being on the front page of the Boston Business Journal. There's a picture of me in my home office in my Abe and Louis uniform. It's so terrible. You can find it on the Googleverse.
Okay.
What resulted from that article, besides the terrible internet history, is a guy who was one of two owners. He and his wife owned the small group of life sciences companies and had been looking to potentially bring in someone in-house. So my first job as a lawyer was as the first in-house counsel for a group of life sciences companies without having any science background.
Okay. And was it just you there? You were the only in-house attorney?
Yes, and ended up also being director of HR because of unfortunate circumstances. And it was interesting. To me, I don't think it's a big deal that I did it for the couple years that I did it, but everyone, I don't know. I think when you do something, you don't think of it as quite a big deal, right? Unless it's something very obvious, like finishing a marathon in under, I don't know, 2 hours and 30 minutes. Right. But something like doing your job, you don't think it's a big deal. And people say it might be, but I just reached out to people from that same network for help. I joined ACC, utilized their resources a lot. And
sorry, an ACC for people that aren't familiar with that.
Sorry, that's the Association of Corporate Counsel. Okay. They are the best resource, I think, for in-house counsel that there is. They just do things really well, better than some of the other associations. But I met some really great mentors who to this day are huge supporters. And, you know, back to when Twitter started, one of my other followers we met through an introduction is David Cohen, who is my boss now. And we developed a relationship, a friendship, and would have phone calls or would email each other or send holiday cards, G-chat, you know, whatever it was. And we really formed a relationship. So after a couple of years at the life sciences company, I went over to a telecom company, which the guys that worked there, there were a few more lawyers, and their first question to me was, why do you want to go from general counsel to associate counsel? And I responded, because I need to learn, and I'm only going to learn so much by myself at this point. So I went there, and again, continuing this relationship with David, I got some really interesting experience at the telecom company. I got to go down to DC a lot and do some like lobbying type work on behalf of the organization. And for a while, I thought that that was the direction I was going to go, because I didn't think I was ever going to get a job in sports. I was applying to things left and right. I interviewed with the Spartan Race Company. I remember being really sad about not getting that, too, because I have a running background and, you know, it's located in Boston and it'd be perfect.
Right.
But, you know, by not getting that job, a few months later is when David let me know that he might have something going on at the organization that I'm now at. And what he had done was he had a junior associate who moved on to another organization, and he made the business case within our organization to have it be a more experienced position. And he handpicked people to come down for interviews, and I was one of them. And that's how it happened, Twitter and networking.
Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, that's very interesting. You know, I think about this all the time, because I work at a large law firm. I do work that's very interesting, but it's not related to sports at all. And yeah. And I see, you know, colleagues, people from law school do it, you know, working in-house or, you know, working in, like you said, you did at the beginning, just doing little things by themselves. I can't even imagine being by myself. I mean, it's the idea is just frightening. You know, if I make a mistake, somebody, one or two people above me will check it and let me know that it's a mistake, and then that gets evened out. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways that people do. And, you know, and when you talk to people, and I haven't asked you this question yet, but when I talk to people who do work in sports, and you say, oh, do you want to do litigation? Do you want to do corporate work? You know, should I go in-house? What's the best thing? And kind of over and over, the answer you get is, you know, it's all important. You just want to be a good lawyer. You want to make connections. For you, Twitter was a way to do that. What's your philosophy on that? I mean,
yeah. So I think when people ask me about what should I focus on in law school, what should I focus on in college, I have two different things that I say. The first is, if you can go to a really good school that focuses on, you know, has a sport management program or a sports law program, and it's within your budget. Because I stress this is really important, and people don't often, well, I think maybe nowadays more, but you know, it's really important to think about what you're going to be saddled with after the fact, because you're not going to be making a ton of money.
Yeah, I can attest to it's important to consider what you're going to be saddled with.
So, you know, within your, unless you're getting into one of like the top schools for whatever it is you want to do, right? In that case, you deal with it. But, you know, either go to the best sports management school for undergrad or the best law school that has sports, but don't do both. and make sure whatever, you know, you're doing, you do the reverse. Even people not going into law school, I say, you know, either go to a really good sport management undergrad or a really good sport management grad program, but don't do the same. Yeah. And make sure that the on the reverse end that you're focusing on business. And so when it comes to law school, I say if there isn't a sports law program that you like or want to get into, or, you know, you've already done the sports thing in undergrad, focus on business generally, because you're going to be a generalist. It's very rare for, if you're working for an organization that's a, you know, a franchise, even a, I mean, at the league level, you're a little more specialized, but definitely at the franchise level, you're a generalist. You don't go into specialties usually. There's only one, maybe two attorneys at most franchises in our league. There are a couple that have more, and there are one or two that have none. So you're not in a situation where you can really divide and conquer that well and always be on top of things. You kind of all have to know the same things a little bit because you get inundated with the volume. So for me, it's focus on business law, contracts, get as much drafting experience as you can get, redlining experience, what have you. That's a huge part of what I do all day long. Is contracts. And I'm not talking player contracts.
Right.
You know, it's the little down the corner electric company guy that's going to, you know, put new wires in or something. Or it could be, you know, for a suite or a naming rights deal, or, you know, coaches contracts. But I would say the majority of what I do has to deal with contracts. So that's, for me, one of the most important skills that I tell people to focus on. And then having a general understanding of the business also is going to be incredibly important to really understand the risk management aspects of it all.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, that's some good advice. And yeah, I mean, I think people think, oh, I want to go, yeah, negotiate the salary of Cam Newton or whatever and stuff like that. And that's such a small part of most attorneys' lives if you're not an agent or a lot of that's controlled by the CBA and stuff like that as well, right?
And it's a different job. You know, so lawyers are typically on the business side of the house. You hate to make the division, but there is a division there. There's a business side of the house and the football side of the house, or the baseball side of the house, or the basketball side of the house. And basketball side of the house is your GM, your coaches, your player development people, strength and conditioning, nutritionist, whatever. And on that side is who's dealing with the player contracts. And the rest of the business moves on doing other things. So when you're in-house for a team, it's not likely that you're going near those contracts. Very few that I know of do.
Right. Okay. And that's another thing that some people have mentioned is that, you know, working for a team or something, you hear, I've talked to some people who say, you know, it's not as sexy or it's not as exciting as it sounds. You know, you're dealing with the wire contracts and the things like that. And is that something that you've experienced? Or, I mean, I imagine you like your job, obviously, but...
I think you can look at it in two ways. I'm doing the same exact thing I was doing previously. The same skill set, the same tasks. At the end of the day, though, the product that my company puts out is something that I really care about. And that's really, really cool. It's no different than working for, I don't know, Coca-Cola, right? You're doing a lot of the same things. There are a few things that are obviously a tiny bit different, but what's really great about it is the product at the end of the day. And yeah, it can be mundane at times. I spend hours sometimes just scanning documents and and filing them in the right place, you know, in our drive. But other times I am standing on the sidelines and watching paracommandos come down from the sky right before a game.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's incredible. So anybody who says, you know, that it's not as sexy as you think, they're right. They also might be a little jaded. And I'm still a little kid about it all. I still get excited about all of it. And even the things that annoy me, it passes because I feel fortunate to be in the industry.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, that's a good perspective to hear. So, Yeah, not everybody's jaded, I guess. Not yet.
Listen, I'm usually the most cynical human being you've ever met. But, you know, when it comes to this, it's what I really wanted to do. And it has lived up to what I hoped. And part of that, I believe, is because I'm surrounded by really great people. You know, I can see where maybe if you didn't have such a great organization that it would be tougher, but I really do. I'm very lucky to work with the people that I work with, and they truly care about me and all of our colleagues as people, not just as workers.
Okay. Well, let's transition then and talk about your new project, this podcast. It's called Leveling the Playing Field. I'm a big podcast listener. I listen to 10 or more podcasts a day, probably. And, I speed them up. I listen to a whole bunch. And so anyway, I was excited to see a new one. What's the purpose behind this podcast? Why are you doing it, and what is it?
So Leveling the Playing Field is a podcast that features women who work in sports. I have casual conversational interviews with these various women that I just sometimes randomly reach out to. And, you know, one of the reasons I started it was I was listening to podcasts. I really like podcasts. And there were some that were about women in business, but I didn't see anything about women in sports, except for women's sports specific, or women journalists talking about sports and the games themselves, but not about the careers and the lives. I listened to Tim Ferriss, and he has these very long form podcasts, which clearly I have taken to. And really he gravitates towards people and their stories and all different little aspects of their lives. And that's kind of, I think, what I've done, maybe not as great as him yet. But the other thing was there was, a top 40 under 40 type of list that was published by, you know, the publisher. And there were 6 women on it, which is absurd. These lists drive me crazy because they're lazy and there are so many women that they could look towards. And so, I don't know, I got a little fire in my belly, I guess. And I wanted to create a space that young women could, you know, go to as a resource to see people who look like them. I mean, representation is so important when it comes to all aspects of life, when you're determining, you know, what your career is going to be or where you're going to live, whatever it is. We saw this phenomenon with when Barack Obama was elected and how important it was for there to be an African American as president. And it all of a sudden allowed people to believe that they could be president that didn't think so before. And your mom, your grandmother, your dad, everyone in your life may tell you you're amazing and that you can do whatever you want and be whoever you want to be. But until you see someone who looks like you in one of those positions, in the higher offices or really high-powered jobs, there's always going to be a part of you that doesn't truly believe what everyone has been saying. And this allows young women to see other women in these. You know, some of these are really big names and have these amazing jobs. And I have no idea how I convinced them to be on my podcast. But it allows, you know, young women to do that. It also allows me to put a spotlight on how incredible these women are and really get some conversations going. And then the third part was women in male-dominated industries for a very long time have felt that they need to act like a man or be really cold or tough. And that's true. We do sometimes. But we don't allow ourselves to be our authentic selves at work sometimes because of that. And what I think I have done fairly well is by being authentically myself, the women have felt comfortable enough to be themselves. And so we see these women who normally we see as super tough and like a hardline negotiator as being a complete person, having feelings and passions and, I don't know, dogs. Sometimes there's a dog barking. Uh-huh. But it also just allows us all to to be ourselves. And that's extremely important these days, I think. And we talk about some tough issues at times.
Yeah, and I think that's it's one thing I like about your podcast, and like you said about your vision, is the getting this whole person approach. Because, you know, sometimes you read about in the news, oh, there's this person achieved this great thing, whether it's in sports or business or sports business or whatever, and you think, oh, I'm never going to be like that person or whatever. But I think when you hear these people, you hear them talk, you maybe hear them curse, maybe hear them, you know, whatever, you think, oh, that's like me.
Right.
You know, maybe a little more down the path, maybe a little smarter, I don't know. But yeah, I think that humanizing factor is very important for young people. I looking up to these people, I think that's important.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I know a lot of people struggle with, and this isn't female specific, is wanting to be perfect or wanting to emulate these people that we think are perfect. And we have seen in the past few years in particular, a movement, I guess, of, you know, CEOs, CIOs, CFOs, people at Fortune 500 companies, people in sports, whether it be athletes or coaches, actors, actresses, what have you, coming out and talking about like real life. And we live in this, you know, Instagrammed, curated world, except me, because I put dumb things on my Instagram just to show I'm a normal person. And we sometimes think that those curated photos and that curated life, that is, the moments are specifically picked out for public consumption, we think that that's their whole life and that it's, you know, unachievable and it makes us feel bad about ourselves. And that's not what it's like at all for anyone. I mean, if it might be for one person, I don't know who, but and that's important. You know, you're never going to get better as a person if you're constantly comparing yourselves to these unbelievably unachievable things. But if you see that somebody like me has dealt with depression and anxiety since I was 13 and somehow have managed to, you know, I mean, I stumble a lot, but I've gotten where I am. You feel less alone if you also have those struggles and you start to feel like, well, maybe I could do that. And that's why I'm open about that too, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's really great. You mentioned that you sometimes cold reach out to people. But what's your typical process for finding people to be on your podcast? I'm interested in this as a podcaster myself.
It's been really interesting. So the podcast just came out. The third episode comes out tomorrow. So the third episode will be out by the time you have released this. And the first people that I went to be guests were friends of mine that I knew already in the industry. And I have yet to do one of their interviews.
Okay.
Right. The other people are people that I had maybe a little bit of a network connection to. Maybe I tend to send little, like, I send notes to people that I don't know sometimes. So somebody gets the top, like I do this with college athletics a lot. I see that a woman gets the athletic director position and I will often send her a note of congratulations because that's such a big deal. And so few females have achieved that. So some of the women are women that I had a connection with through that, like they had responded to the note or what have you. And by note, I mean literally handwritten.
Uh-huh.
And then others, I was at Sports Lawyers Association and there was a panel on gender equity in sports. And I went to that and one of my guests, Terry Jackson, was with the WNBPA, was on that panel and she's phenomenal and we're like friends now. And which I feel like I could say about most of these women because we form like a kinship, but others, Sally Burgesson and Jen Welter are both really great examples. I did not have a connection to either of them. I'm sure I could have gotten to Jen, but I didn't have a direct connection. And Sally, I had been following on Twitter for quite some time because I'm a runner dork and she's just really an interesting person and what she does with her company always intrigues me. And I literally just sent her an email via LinkedIn and said, here's what I'm doing. I would really love to talk to you about it. Even if you're not interested about coming on, I would appreciate, you know, chatting with you. But I, you know, love what you do, what your company does, and I've been a fan for a while. And that was it. And with Jen, it was the same thing, same type of email. I just decided one day, okay, let's send Jen Welter a LinkedIn. Like, these things just come into my head. And that's how it's been for the most part. I have had people connect to me now through LinkedIn after they've heard about the podcast. I think it was helpful after Jen posted about it on LinkedIn. Some people saw me, and so now I'm having conversations with them about, you know, their career trajectory. And then I ask people for recommendation, you know, suggestions, and have them do like an email intro. But when it's cold, I'm just, you know, I tell what the focus of what I'm doing is. I give a little, like I say, I'm a sports attorney in a professional league, and here's what I'm doing, and here's why I'm doing it, and why I think it's important, and here's how I see you fitting in. You know, would you be interested in talking about it before even completely agreeing to it? You know, would you be interested in having a 5-10 minute conversation, and then going from there? And I've been very fortunate that no one has turned me down yet.
Yeah, once they get to know you a little, they can't resist joining the podcast, I'm sure.
I've been lucky. I think because of the topic and of the podcast and just the general state of, you know, the world, maybe. The women who have agreed to do it have really been excited to do it, as if I'm offering them a big opportunity. Whereas to me, it's such a huge deal to me that they're doing it, but they want to do it. They think it's worthwhile and that it's important. And I'm so new at it. I'm still so grateful for it always.
Yeah, I think it's a great podcast. I think it's a really interesting idea. I'm excited to see where it goes. And I really think it's a, you know, kind of a growth industry right now, women in sports. I had kind of a life-changing experience when I was in law school. I did this, it was a law and business competition, sports law and business. And I was on a team with, it was me and then 3 women, and they were all incredible. And it was the first time in a sports setting that I was outnumbered by, you know, by women. And so it was interesting because it was kind of far away from our law school. So we got to talk, you know, and then we went to the competition, and I remember I went to the bathroom, and I was in the bathroom, and these guys were talking about my teammates, and it was not great things that they were saying. And I just, it was like one of those movies, you know, about the civil rights generation or whatever, where the bad guys are so villainous that you just think,
oh, yeah.
You know, that's not real. But I was just like, oh, man, that really sucks that people have to deal with that. So then we went and beat them in the competition and took home as a prize. So that was good. But
good job.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there's definitely lots of women in sports doing great things and lots of interesting stories. So excited to hear about it on Leveling the Playing Field.
Thank you so much. And I hope your listeners will tune in too. I will warn that they do tend to go a little on the longer side, but as you said, you can like make them go faster. So I need to learn that trick for listening. And then everything else, you know, the website and social media, it's all kind of a learning curve for me. So
yeah,
we just keep pushing them out. This week we have Denise White from EAG Sport Management, and she's such a badass. She's, you know, the woman who essentially created the full service marketing side of the agency business for athletes. So Okay. Their main agent was getting them their on the field contract and then doing nothing else. And so she built a business, and a very, very good one, at fulfilling all of the other needs. And she's got an incredible story.
Okay. Well, yeah, no. And of course all the agencies do that now. So that's, that sounds very interesting. We'll have to check that out. So, well, thanks for coming on. We'll put links and stuff when this goes up. You're also a great Twitter follow for sports and non-sports, information. So,
thank you.
That information out there. But, I don't know if there's anything else you want to say before we wrap up.
No, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you and your listeners. I, know that you are doing a great job with your podcast and really bringing some interesting content to the world of sports. So that's always great. And, you know, I hope that we can connect again in the future.
Okay. Well, sounds great. Thanks for coming on the Sports Lobbies podcast, and we'll talk to you again soon.
This has been an episode of the Sports Law Biz podcast. This podcast is available through the Sports Law Biz website or through iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Before wrapping things up, I'd like to thank some people. First of all, I'd like to thank my friend, Lieb Montoya, for designing the Sports Law Biz podcast logo as well as the Sports Law Biz blog logo. His artistic ability certainly surpasses mine. If interested, you can check out more of Lieb's work on Instagram and Twitter. His handle is @LiebMontoya in both places. That's @LIB Montoya. Additionally, I'd like to thank the musical artist for providing this theme music that you're listening to right now. The artist is a band called The Losers. The album is entitled Young, Tough, Terrible. The track is Sports with an exclamation point. The label is Needle Drop Co. This music is available through a Creative Commons license of Attribution Non-Commercial 3.0 Unported. This podcast was produced and recorded by myself, Peter Ott, and you can reach me at my personal Twitter handle, @PeterJOTT, through the Sports Law Biz Twitter handle, @SportsLawBiz, or through email at sportslawbizblog@gmail.com. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you are interested in contributing to either the Sports Law Biz blog or podcast, definitely reach out to me. I love to talk to people about these issues, and I know I can use all the help I can get. Finally, I'd like to thank you for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was enjoyable. If so, please spread the word and let your friends and colleagues know about it. Leave a review on iTunes. Any way you can spread the news about this podcast would be greatly appreciated. That's our episode today. Tune in next time to learn more about the law and business of sports. I'm looking forward to discussing it with you on the Sports Law Biz podcast.